I am very disciplined in my physical exercise and fitness routine. Not only do I love the way I look and feel in my body, but it has been so critical in my mental health. I just feel so good after doing a yoga or workout session, almost like a high. It truly is the best feeling. I'm not someone who loves going to the gym, though. I find it takes away from my time, and although I do like going to a studio for workshops or retreats, doing yoga classes there wasn't feasible. You have to work on their schedule, it takes time to go there, set up, do the flow, and then drive back home. I love being able to work out or do yoga from my house. I just unroll my mat. My son plays next to me, so he gets to see me taking care of myself, and I feel like that's such an important thing for him to witness firsthand. I started my yoga journey on YouTube from the comfort of my home, and while I am so grateful for it giving me a start, I felt like I was missing something. I had to go to different channels depending on what sort of exercise I wanted. Some teachers were too slow, some made it boring, and I just wanted someone with some humor and fun, but who also taught a good flow. So I got certified as a teacher and started my own channel. This is a one-stop shop, and on my YouTube page, you'll find yoga flows ranging in all styles and lengths. You'll also find Pilates and yoga workouts, prenatal classes, my podcast episodes, wellness vlogs, and more. Click the link in the show notes to subscribe to my channel and support me and free online yoga and fitness. Welcome to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell, and I am the host of this show. This podcast is designed to inspire and empower you to start and maintain your own wellness journey so you can become the best version of yourself. Let's begin. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I am your host, Megan Farrell Gordon, and today we have a podcast episode that came highly requested, and it's all about my postpartum journey. And while I feel like at times I feel like I should have done an episode earlier in my journey on this, I feel like I'm in a really good spot now, and I wanted to give you tangible tips and tangible takeaways while I've moved past this part of my journey. So that is what we are going to talk about today. I have some questions that if you follow me on social media, I put a little box and asked if you wanted to know anything specifically about my postpartum journey. So I will get to those, but let's just dive right in. At the time of this recording, tomorrow, my son will be 9 months. And it's crazy to think of that whole saying, like 9 months in, 9 months out, and to see him where he is at today and process the fact that 9 months ago, he was in my belly and he was crying for me, it was 9 months. It really is closer to 10 months when you think about it, 40 weeks. It's the average length of a pregnancy. I was just over 37, so closer to 9 months, but I digress. It's crazy to think about where we are at right now. I remember when he was first born, and so many people came to me and said, the first 6 months are the hardest, and they truly, truly are. I also remember thinking, oh my God. 6 months? I don't know if I can make it for 6 months because it is a wild, wild ride. And I feel like there's this feeling of not wanting to maybe burden a mother with postpartum, what she may experience during postpartum, because I will also preface this and say not everybody experiences postpartum depression or or anxiety or both. I do feel like everybody does experience it on some level, but sometimes it's not as intense for some people, and sometimes it's very, very intense. And I feel like maybe people don't want to, one, comment on it and kind of like scare a new mother, and two, maybe there's like an thought of like forgetting some of it that you went through. Because it is funny, I was saying to Brad the other day that there are things that I truly don't recall very well from those first newborn months and weeks. Brad remembers all of it. But I'm like, really? Like, I mean, I know I was sleep deprived and stuff, but you almost forget. I don't want to say like how bad it is, because that just sounds totally terrifying. But it is a lot. And I remember nearing the end of my pregnancy, you know, people would be like, how are you feeling? Are you nervous about labor and delivery? I was never nervous about labor and delivery. I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be like a walk in the park, but I was the most nervous about postpartum depression and anxiety. And not that I was trying to like put that vibe out there, but I have in the past struggled with debilitating anxiety and depression. And just seeing what some of my friends had gone through with it, I was really quite nervous to experience that for myself. And I guess it's just you don't really know what you're in store for, other than knowing that it might be a very unpleasant experience. So I'll never forget a girlfriend of mine. We were voice chatting, and I'm going to back up. I don't want to go down that path just yet. You are on such a high, I think, those first few days afterwards. I feel like there's just so much adrenaline in your body. You're just like, this new baby is in your life. And it's just like, wow. It's like, I think your brain and your body just like amp you up so that you can deal with it. In the first few days, I felt fine. I felt tired, definitely, but I also felt like, oh, okay, like this isn't bad. I feel like I can handle this. And very quickly, I think it was like day 3 or 4, I crashed so, so hard. And looking back now, one, I feel like there's nothing else in the world where you will experience a trauma like you do to the body and brain, and it doesn't matter how pleasant of an experience you have giving birth, it is still a trauma to the body. It is a lot for the brain and the body to handle, with an epidural, without an epidural. The amount of, again, not to like scare anybody, but like the amount of trauma that your body goes through is absolutely wild. I remember seeing someone post, I wish I had actually brought up that post before I did this recording, but I didn't. So anyways, I remember seeing a post like the human body can handle, it's like 42 ounces of pain before it, like, it can no longer handle that amount of pain. And when a mother gives birth, it's like 54 units of pain. It is a wild difference of like what the pain threshold is generally for like the human population, and then what a mother experiences when she gives birth to her baby. There is nothing else in the entire world where you will experience that type of trauma to the body and then not get any rest afterwards, not get any support afterwards. Like, if you think of, if you've ever been sick, what does the doctor say? Go home, get lots of rest, maybe here's some medication that'll help you. If you go through any type of surgery, same thing, you know, it's like, go home, get some rest, get as much sleep as you can. That is when the body's going to do all the healing. Potentially, here are some meds to like help you. And like with birth, it's like,
you go through this. There's no sleep and recovery after, and there is nobody there to teach you what to do afterwards. Like, you are truly just winging this on your own. It is so much for the body to and the mind to take on. So I crashed really. I felt good. You know, I like for the first little while, you're like waking up every, I felt like it was like every 20 minutes. It probably wasn't. It was probably a little longer, but you know, especially when the baby is first born, they should be waking up every 2 to 3 hours to feed. This is to allow them to put back on the birth weight, because you have birth weight, and then usually after that they lose some of their birth weight, and then you want to get them back to their birth weight within a certain amount of time. So usually baby will just wake up every 2 to 3 hours to feed. That's not the case for everyone, I understand that, but most of the time, I'm just going to say general rule of thumb. So you're waking up every 2 to 3 hours, if not more than that, to feed your baby. And it's like you're both tired, but you also feel like you can't sleep. I remember being in the hospital bed and at one point holding Hendrix and just kind of like nodding forward, but like catching myself as I was nodding forward, and then freaking out afterwards, like, oh my god, what if I had actually fallen asleep? Like, would I have dropped Hendrix? Like, then your mind kind of gets racing, and then you're afraid to almost sleep afterwards. I remember being so like petrified to sleep and being like, somebody has to be up with Hendrix and just make sure he's breathing, you know, make sure that his head hasn't turned the wrong way and that he can't, you know, breathe or anything. I really, really struggled with anxiety with my postpartum. So, you know, I remember waking up the first little while, you're like, there's adrenaline, you're like, okay, like, I'm a new mom, I got this. And then you crash really hard. And I want to say it's like day 3 or 4 where like the hormones just like, as soon as you give birth, all the hormones are gone from the body. And it is a lot of hormones that release, and you just cry for no reason. Like, I remember just sobbing at times, especially around nighttime. I would just cry and cry and cry. One, I had this irrational fear of Hendrix just dying. And it sounds horrible to say, but I was just terrified that he would just die while we were sleeping. And like, how would you know? Because like, you're like, I'm sleeping, Brad's sleeping. So I was like, somebody has to be up with him all the time to make sure he was sleeping and breathing. You know, I remember kind of breastfeeding him a few times. It was like night 3 or 4 and just sobbing while I was breastfeeding him. And it's hard to articulate and explain, you know, like, Brad would be like, baby, like, what's wrong? I'd be like, I don't know. You're tired. It's, you know, if you listen to some of my other prenatal pregnancy, post-pregnancy podcasts, I had been in a car accident before then. Even though I knew baby was coming, I also feel like because he came earlier than I was expecting him to, and because we had dealt with the car accident, I just felt really unprepared for him. There were still things I had to do in his nursery. I thought I had 3 weeks left before he came. And you know, sometimes babies are even like 2 weeks past their due date. So it's like, you could theoretically have a month or 5 weeks left. But he came early. And I remember thinking like, oh my god, like, I'm truly not ready for him to be here. There's things I had to do. I was so tired the day I went into labor. And I just pushed through because I was like, I have so much to do. And I remember just like, crying in the night, middle of the night, just like, you're so tired, all these hormones have left, you're exhausted. And I had chosen to breastfeed, so it's not like Brad could really help me out, you know, it's not like he could feed Hendrix, give him a bottle. It was like, okay, like, it's truly just me, it's my own decision, but like, I'm the only one that's awake. And then, you know, I followed the 5-5-5 rule. So if you don't know what that is, it's basically, the concept is 5 days in the bed, 5 days on the bed, and 5 days around the bed. So Brad had dragged out the futon to the front room for me to be able to lay on the bed with Hendrix, but to be able to watch TV if I wanted. It's also very bright in our living room. Like, our bedroom tends to be a little more darker. And I thought at first, I was like, oh, I'll just hang in the bedroom. You know, that way you can have access to the living room. But I'm so glad that I actually came out into the living room. It was brighter, although I will say 12 days after Hendrix was born, it rained every single day. It's wild. I'm not kidding you. It was literally like 12 days of rain. And so I spent the first 5 days literally on the futon with him. I would only get up if I had to use the bathroom. We had food delivered a lot of the time to us. We had some of those chef plates done. We would just order some food. And then I did 5 days on the bed. So same kind of concept. I was able to kind of move around a little bit first. That's another thing too, man. You are sore. I mean, going to the bathroom is a trek. And I feel like a lot of people experience this, but for me, even though I was really, really good at doing my pelvic floor exercises, I still had some incontinence, and it's embarrassing, you know, like you're just sitting there and I would think, I'm like, oh man, I have to pee, and then I would pee myself. Now, you have pads, you have the very unsexy underwear that goes with it, so it's not like I'm peeing on the floor or anything, but that's also like really hard to like wrap your head around. You're like, oh my god, did I just pee myself? And you're like, yeah, I just peed myself. I remember just being so embarrassed about that. And so, you know, you're tired, you're not sleeping. I remember just, yeah, feeling like Hendrix was just, I was so afraid that he was just gonna die. And I also feel like I was grieving part of my old life. And even though I was happy to be a mother and to have this beautiful, healthy baby boy, there are parts of your life that you're like, you know, I would be like, I had thought, okay, Hendrix will just sleep in the bassinet beside me. It'll be great because I can still make sure that when I do get sleep, I'm getting a good night's sleep in my own bed. And that wasn't the case. Hendrix did not do very well in the bassinet. He was up every 20 minutes. He just did not like to. And most babies don't like to be on something cold and hard. They want to be close to their mama. They want to be snuggled in. And so you're not sleeping great because after 4 days of trying to get him in the bassinet and him just not liking that, I resorted to co-sleeping, which now I'm very happy that we did. It allowed me to get a little bit longer stretches of sleep. I feel like this is a whole other podcast because co-sleeping is such a touchy subject. And I will say too, Brad was never comfortable being in the bed with us. And for me, being the only one who was breastfeeding him, I was like, you know, somebody might as well get good sleep. Why don't you sleep on the futon in the living room? That way, you know, you can watch him while I'm trying to rest in between being up and about with him. So at least one of us is getting good sleep. And then, you know, you can watch him while I'm trying to get rest in between. So I ended up co-sleeping with him, which allowed me to get a little bit of longer stretches. But then that was a new anxiety of mine. I was terrified that I was going to roll over on my baby. I was afraid that I was going to suffocate him. And I remember telling my doula this, and she was like, Megan, like, you will not suffocate your baby. You know, there are safe practices when it comes to co-sleeping, and I'm just going to go through some of them off the top of my head. But it's like, you can't be overweight naturally. You know, giving birth, you're still probably heavier than your pre-pregnancy body, but like, you can't naturally be overweight. It is recommended that you are breastfeeding over bottle feeding. Can't be a smoker. You can't be taking any sort of medication. No pillows or blankets in the bed. And I did all these things, but you still like, oh my god, like, what if I roll over on my baby? So that would keep me up a lot of the time. And then, you know, you're feeding the baby. So then I would naturally just kind of be up a little bit afterwards. And by the time I fell asleep, I felt like Hendrix was re-waking up. So that's crazy. You're getting like very, very little sleep. And my mom had suggested, because, you know, I would feed Hendrix and then you're just like, like for me, I would just like feed him and like stare at the closet. And, you know, they feed for quite a little bit of time. And then, you know, afterwards, you don't necessarily want to lay them right back down afterwards, especially if they tend to have some reflux. So then you try to sit upright with them for like 20 minutes afterwards. So the whole thing can be like a half hour experience. And I remember my mom saying, okay, like, I don't love to like, I didn't love the idea of like sitting down and like watching TV, because I felt like one, the blue light would keep me up afterwards. So I just got like a little light. My mom was like, get a little light, do some reading in between this time. You might as well make the most of it while you're up anyways. So that helped, because then I felt like I wasn't just like staring at a closet crying anymore while I was feeding Hendrix. I had something tangible to do. I would just like read in between feeding him at night. And then normally what would happen in the morning, I would give Hendrix to Brad. Brad would watch him just while I tried to get a little bit more extra sleep or brush my teeth. And I think that's another part of it too. Like, I was under the assumption that like there was still aspects of my life that I could do. I would just like have this baby that was part of it. And that wasn't the case, at least for me, you know, like I wasn't able to take my long luxurious showers anymore because the baby needed me. I wasn't able to do things around the house because like I had to be holding Hendrix. And that was a really hard concept for me to wrap my head around, was like this idea that like I had a baby that was like glued to me. And I was like, but I want to be able to move in the kitchen and cook something up for me, even if it's small. I want to be able to have a nice shower. And like the reality for me was I wasn't able to do that. And it was a really hard thing for me to wrap my head around. I'm trying to like keep this in line with like, instead of bouncing all over the place, like where my brain is at. So yeah, I would say grieving some of my old life, also being terrified something was going to happen to my son. Like, these were just postpartum depression, for sure. Postpartum anxiety, for sure. And then trying to also watch your partner kind of navigate his new role as a parent. And for me, like, Brad was just trying to constantly make me feel better. And, like, he couldn't. I was just like, I know you're trying to do things to make me happy, but I'm just like, I can't explain it why. I just feel sad. Like, 8 o'clock would hit and I would just cry before going to sleep. I would usually go to bed around that time and Brad would hold the baby until, you know, he would stay up until usually about midnight. So unless Hendrix needed to be fed, Brad would like hold the baby. I would usually get a few hours before Hendrix needed to be fed. And then, you know, Hendrix would come into the bed with me for the rest of the night. So I remember after all that rain, being able to finally get outside for a little stretch of time. And you're also like, I feel like you feel so foreign in your body. And I mean, I'm lucky enough that I was able to have a natural vagina birth, which I feel like your body just like, it helps kind of balance the hormones a little better as opposed to having a C-section. And I was able to move like a little bit better, although it's still mind-blowing. Like, everything just feels really heavy. They also say like to lay down post baby for those, you know, 15 days if you can, because your uterus is shrinking and going back into place. And if you're standing up constantly, gravity plays a part and like will make the transition harder. But usually when you have a natural vaginal birth, the hormones kind of balance a little better. Your uterus usually goes back into place a little easier than if you were to have a C-section. But it's still like, to walk up and down my street takes me like 5 minutes normally. I did it the first time I did it, I swear it took me 20 minutes. Like, I was just walking so slowly. I will also say too, I was not aware of how much bleeding I would do afterwards. Like, it was like 2.5 weeks of like heaviest period of my life. And actually, I do recall one girlfriend saying, just so you know, there's a lot of blood if you have a vaginal birth. And I was like, well, that makes sense, right? Like, you just gave birth. And she's like, no, like, it is a lot. And yeah, it was like 2.5 weeks of heavy bleeding. And I mean, you are sore. I didn't have any tearing, so I didn't have stitches to deal with or an episiotomy by any means, and I was still exceptionally sore. So like, you just don't even naturally want to do a lot of things. Also, keep in mind, if you have listened to any of my previous podcasts, day two of giving birth, my insurance company called and said, we need our rental car back. And I was like, that's not happening. I literally just gave birth 2 days ago. How am I supposed to get my son to and from his appointment? Because you do have some appointments for the first few weeks afterwards that you have to go to. And they were like, that's not really our problem. And Brad laid into them one day about like just being, having morals about a new mom. Like, day four came around and I was, I'm supposed to be resting. I'm supposed to be bonding with my baby. And instead, I'm trying to look for a new car. I'm trying to deal with insurance. It was just not a natural postpartum recovery, I think. Like, I remember being in the car and making an Instagram story and telling everyone what was going on, because I was just so floored that there was like no humanity in this company, that they were requesting me to have a rental car back. Not only had the rental car back, but they has also hadn't paid us out for our car being, and I didn't have the finances to buy it. Like, I don't have $20,000 just lying around that I was able to go out and purchase a new or used vehicle. And used vehicles these days cost just as much as new vehicles do. It's absolutely insane. So trying to find a new car, stressed beyond stressed about that. Then I had to go to, you know, Nova Scotia Access, and I have to get paperwork signed. And it was just, it was a bloody nightmare the first week. I did not get to rest and recover as much as I had wanted to. I was also had so much anxiety about being in the car with Hendrix. Even if Brad was driving, I was like, I would just get in the car and cry and be like, please go slow, slow. Like, make sure you're watching everybody. I was so afraid of somebody else hitting us, because that's what happened in the car accident, was somebody else had hit me and totaled my vehicle. And so it's like, I'm not afraid of you being a bad driver, Brad. I'm afraid of everybody else. What if somebody falls asleep? What if somebody is texting? What if somebody drops something on their lap and they look down for it? Like, my mind was just like, even though I had dealt with debilitating anxiety in my past, I feel like because there was so much more on the line, like, I just could not wrap my head around all these morbid and intrusive thoughts that were going through my head of like, somebody hitting us in the car, Hendrix just like not breathing or dying throughout the nighttime. Like, it's just like, oh my God. You're like, I don't want to leave the bubble of my house. I was also so afraid of Hendrix being sick and like picking up a virus, even though it was summertime. You know, I remember being in the doctor's office and we had gone off to away from people. This was like a newborn checkup, and some idiot guy came and sat down right beside us and coughed, and I instantly just burst into tears. Like, I have a newborn child, and if you're sick in the doctor's office, like, I was so afraid of Hendrix picking up a virus and something happening to him. Just like, even though I feel like these are very rational thoughts, like, nobody wants their newborn to get sick. Nobody wants their child to get in a, you know, I don't even like saying the thing, but like, car accident or anything. But they like were just like consuming me, and they like they just felt so, yeah, debilitating, I guess, is the like crippling anxiety when it came to that. I remember taking a walk and talking to a friend who had had, I believe her baby girl was about 15 months ahead of mine, and just like being like, I don't know what I'm doing. I also feel like you get so wrapped up into what other people online are doing. And if I could tell any new mom, do not listen or watch what other people are doing online. You will truly feel like a horrible mother and like you're not doing the right things. You know, I would see people talk about, oh, like my newborn baby is sleeping like 12 hours through the night. And I was like, my newborn isn't doing that. Is there something wrong with him? Is there something wrong with me? Like, why isn't my baby doing that? Or like, I'll finish that thought afterwards. You know, talking to this girlfriend, and just, I know I sound like, you know, when you're like talking to somebody and you're like, you sound so sad on the phone. And I remember just thinking like, this is my life now. I don't know what I'm doing as a mom. I feel like a complete failure. You know, people say like you should be sleep training your baby, and like babies at first tend to be gassy. And so, you know, that can irritate them. And, you know, I remember being afraid of like eating certain foods, because they say there's some foods afterwards you shouldn't eat as a new mom because they can cause gas in your baby. And, you know, babies, especially newborns, can't handle a lot of gas, and that'll upset them. And so I was terrified to like eat certain things for fear, like broccoli apparently is one thing that can cause gas in your baby, like being afraid to eat certain foods for fear of causing discomfort to my baby and for him to cry all night, and then I would have to deal with that. Like, I just remember talking to her and being like, I feel like such a failure. I feel like I'm not ready for this. I think that was another thing. I felt so unprepared. I felt alone. Even though, you know, other moms have experienced this and are currently going through it just as much as you are, I couldn't relate to Brad. Brad wasn't up all night with the baby with me. You just feel like you're the only person that's up at night feeding your baby, being afraid to sleep and watching your baby. And there was one day I just remember taking a walk, and like this was like 3 weeks afterwards, and literally I remember it clear as day, just like a click in my brain. I remember where I was walking with Hendrix and being like, this is your life now. Like, you just have to accept that you are a mom, you have a baby, and you need to embrace it the best you can. And from that moment on, I still had anxieties, but it, you know, I stopped watching what people were doing online. I stopped researching, because I mean, I would spend hours holding the baby and researching, like, you know, how to do this and how to do this. And I instead chose to focus on one person, technically two people, that I could rely on for good, solid advice, and that were in line with my ethics and how I wanted to be as a mom, and ask them questions. So, you know, my doula came over and she showed me exercises, how to burp the baby after Hendrix had fed. And, you know, I just like ask her all these questions. You know, Hendrix is doing this. Newborns tend to go through something what is called like the witching hour. Hendrix was like three. It's usually like, I don't know why they call it the witching hour. It usually is like 2 to 3 hours. But it's like, okay, that's totally normal. You know, from like 5 to 8, he would just cry. And, you know, like at that time, watch a show if you can. I mean, sometimes he was very loud that it was hard to, but like, you just, there's nothing you can really do about this. Just, you know, accept it as it is and know that it will pass. And it does. I promise you, like, it does pass. But, you know, having one girlfriend that I could ask questions to, having my doula that I could also ask questions to, and that she would come do check-ins with us. And I you know, stopped watching what other people were doing online. I stopped reading books about like getting your baby on a schedule. Like that might work for some people. We never at the start, even now, like we're just getting into him starting to be on a schedule when it comes to naps. That's it. Not for food. Really, I would say not for food, but because wake up and sleep time and naps are kind of regulated now, like he just tends to eat around the same time every day. But like, that's another thing I guess I would say is like, I'm somebody who thrives on schedules and routines. And because a newborn is anything but a schedule, I found that really hard to wrap my head around because it was like, okay, at this time I usually did this, at this time I usually did this. And you have no routine, you have no rhythm when it comes to a newborn. You just have to take time to develop that. And I remember taking Hendrix to see his chiropractor because it was recommended to me to see one because, one, he was tongue-tied, two, the car accident, and because he had gotten stuck, he was favoring one of his sides a little bit more. And it also helps with sleep and gas and stuff. And she is such a lovely, lovely person. And I remember her saying to me, there will come a point where you will get onto a schedule and this is where you're going to thrive with him. But really look at it as routines. So what are routines that you can do that aren't based around the time on a clock, but like first thing in the morning you do this and then you can do this after he's done this. Try to get into a habit of that. So then there's a little bit of predictability throughout your day. One of my questions here is like, what sort of routine did I develop? So I am going to go through that. And yeah, I feel like this is a whole lot of different information, but yeah, postpartum, man, I also will say I had therapy in place and that made a world of difference. I knew I wanted to see a therapist, even if I didn't quote unquote like experience a lot of postpartum. I knew I wanted to have that lined up as a possibility. And just to like process your emotions of being a new parent, a new mother, and you know, processing your old life and like that being in the past and like what does your future and stuff look like? Like that was really important to me. One of the questions was like, what are things that I did to help with the postpartum phase? So we'll get right into that. Having therapy lined up. Also I had meal prepped, not as much as I had wanted to. If you saw some of my stories or my few of my podcast episodes, the week I gave birth, I was planning like that following week to do all of my meal prepping then, but I had gotten a little bit done. So having some meals prepped and ready to go and focus on protein will help balance your hormones quicker than anything else will. So I really had an emphasis on protein. We did those chef's plates so that Brad was the one who was cooking them, but it was streamlined. Like there was no like running out to the store trying to figure out what was for dinner. It was like, okay, these are our only options. And trying not to worry about the state of the house. Brad and I are very, very clean people. We really have a very tidy house all of the time. And I just had to be okay with the fact that the house was going to look more of a mess than normal. I wasn't doing dishes after having Hendrix. It was like, you know, what can go in the dishwasher goes in the dishwasher. If something has to be washed by hand, it might take a few days unless, you know, Brad wanted to take that on. But for me, it was just like, you just have to learn to live with more of a mess than you are normally used to. So meal prep as much as you can with an emphasis on protein. Have therapy lined up. Also, when people want to come to see you and the baby, they're not there to see the baby. Yes, they might hold the baby and stuff, but when people want to come over, give them tasks. Can you pick me up some groceries? Can you bring me some food while you're here? Can you meal prep for me so I don't have to? There were times where I was like, can you hold the baby so I can just have a shower? So, you know, that is one thing that you can do too. But like, you are not here to entertain people. And I remember Ashley Cooley from Birth Baby Sleep, when we did her prenatal classes, say, when baby comes, like, yeah, you are not there to entertain people. People are there to help and support you. And if they're not, then they shouldn't be in your life or in your household at that time. Can they do laundry for you? Can they tidy up your house while you're there? Can they, yes, maybe can they hold the baby so you can go have a shower? Can they meal prep for you? Can they bring you groceries from the grocery store? Put them to work while they are visiting you. And yes, they can see the baby, of course, but yeah, you are not there to entertain. That was a big takeaway for me. I also tried to get outside as much as I could. And I will also say, I had Hendrix in the summer. I'm very, very lucky that it was nice weather. I do not know what it would be like to have a baby in the dead of winter, but getting outside as much as I possibly could and getting sun made such a world of difference when it came to my postpartum. And just having grace with myself, taking rest when I needed to. There were lots of times I would sleep with Hendrix, and I know everyone says, like, sleep when the baby sleeps. That is way easier said than done, but do try to take that advice, even if it's just a nap, maybe two, with them. The rest of the time, if you feel obligated to have some alone time to maybe make something for yourself a meal-wise, don't make complicated meals, super simple, but do try to take some of that time and have a rest with them. Lynch is pulling out the rest of my questions here. So those were things that I did to help with my postpartum. Someone had also asked, did your doctor support and ask about you? I've heard many doctors don't do check-ins regarding mental health. Yes, my doctor actually, she was amazing. One, she went over co-sleeping as well with me. So, little background, my OBGYN was tag teamed by two people, which is really, really nice. So, although I had one that I had preferred to deliver Hendrix, and she actually ended up delivering him, usually you have a doctor and you assume that this doctor will deliver your baby. And sometimes doctors can't make it on time. Sometimes they're in other surgeries or they're away, and a random doctor will end up delivering your baby. This way, I split my appointments between two doctors. We'll call them Dr. A and Dr. B, so that one of them was going to deliver my baby. I didn't have like a random doctor. It was going to be Dr. A or Dr. B. Dr. A really respected my need for having a more holistic pregnancy and birth and delivery. She also wanted to make sure that I was set up for postpartum afterwards. She knew, because I had told her in one of my prenatal appointments, she had said, you know, how are you physically and mentally dealing with things? And this was near the end. And I remember saying, I am very nervous about postpartum depression and anxiety. And I have anxiety about having postpartum depression and anxiety. And she was like, do you need a therapist? Do you feel like you would benefit from having a therapy session? And I was like, yes. So she got that set up within the first week of giving birth to Hendrix. And she was very just, you know, she was like, you are going to at some point co-sleep. This is how you are going to do it in the most natural, safe way. Don't beat yourself up on it. And you know, like, I remember one of my appointments just being like, I feel so unbelievably sad. And she was like, that is so normal. You know, here are some resources. She gave me a list of resources of support groups that I could join. I also had a public health nurse who was amazing, and I feel like so emotional talking about this. She was really helpful. She also came by, gave me a list of groups. I ended up doing Ashley from Birth Baby Sleep. She had a weekly check-in with mom chats, she calls them. Anyone can go parent-wise, but I went and did those. And it was just nice to be out and to talk to other people, to not feel so alone. You know, she was like, it's summertime, make sure you're getting out. Side, get some sun, get some vitamin D. These are going to make a world of difference. So she was very, very good about supporting me through postpartum. And I feel very lucky to have a doctor that did check in. And so to kind of compound on that, she also knew I did not want to go back on medication. I wanted to deal with this. I have been on medication in the past for a very, very long period of time. And I guess although maybe she would have felt differently if I had said I was suicidal, you know, maybe we need to revisit medication, she completely respected that I did not want to go on to it unless I absolutely needed. Because I do, man, I feel like doctors push antidepressants and anti-anxieties as a band-aid solution. And that's a whole other podcast episode, and not necessarily just for postpartum, but she knew that I really wanted to handle this. But I guess, you know, had certain time passed, there would have been talks about, okay, like, it's been this amount of time, it does not seem like you're getting better, we really need to revisit this. So somebody else had asked, what routine helped you during postpartum? Lord, I feel like there was no routine. That's not true. I actually, looking back now, I'm like, I kind of did have a little bit. You know, Hendrix would wake up first thing in the morning and I would take him immediately outside. So, you know, we're talking like 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 maybe in the morning. I would take him outside in his diaper and just sit on the front porch with him and allow him to get sun. Now, every doctor was like, do not let your baby get direct sunlight. It was first thing in the morning. The UV was at its lowest. It also helped, like, he did not experience jaundice very, very long. And I swear it was because I allowed him to get exposed to sunlight naturally. So the two of us would just sit out there. We would get sun. I would just stay outside for, like, at the very most 5 minutes. Sometimes it was, like, 2 minutes. Just go outside, get some sun on our bodies. And then I would come inside. I would give Hendrix to Brad in the front room while he was on the futon. I would go brush my teeth and then come back. Sometimes it was like feed Hendrix. Then usually that was when I would nap with him that first, his quote unquote, like, first nap of the day. We would lie on the couch or the futon together and catch a little bit of sleep that way. And then after that, I would take him for a walk. He would usually fall asleep after some time again on this walk. Not a long, big walk, but I always made sure that I was getting outside with him for a little bit. Again, relatively first thing in the morning, so, like, it wasn't super hot out. The sun wasn't, like, at its highest UV. That helped substantially. I went walking relatively, I mean, like I said, it rained for 12 days, but, like, after that, I kind of went on walks as often as I could, and I was told that that was fine for me. I didn't get cleared for exercise until about 9 weeks after. Usually it's 6 weeks for me. I guess just the amount of pushing that I had done. My pelvic floor was a little out of whack still. Car accident and stuff. I was not granted permission until like my 9 weeks. But I would, you know, after that, come inside. Sometimes I would have another little nap with him. I would do my pelvic floor exercises. A lot of Kegels. This usually took, when I was focusing on it, 5 to 10 minutes every day. And then I would also do pelvic floor exercises literally every time Hendrix would eat. Why not, right? Like, there's not really doing anything else right then. So I would do that. And then that was kind of like, there wasn't really a lot of routine afterwards. It was like I fed Hendrix on demand. If I had the chance to have a quick shower, I would. I started doing my cold showers again after 5 weeks. And sometimes it was 30 seconds, you know, because Hendrix needed me. But very minimal skincare routine, but I still took time to do some of that. And ate as healthy as I possibly could, very, very simple meals. And that was kind of it, you know, just kind of wing it through the day, tidy up when he was sleeping, try to get him in the bassinet for some naps. Brad would come home from work, and, you know, I also started watching a show again. I was watching Pretty Little Liars at the time. So, you know, if I needed somebody to talk to, I did a lot of phone calls too, a lot of voice clipping with some friends, just watching TV when I was feeding him. So it felt like there was people around, other things going on. That was kind of it. As time goes on, you do start to develop a rhythm and a routine, and then things shift and change, and then you have to develop a new routine and rhythm. So that does get a little bit getting used to. Even now, sometimes I'll get used to how something's going, and then like Hendrix will drop a nap or start eating food, and it's like, oh my goodness, now I need to start a whole new routine with you. But it does get easier. You start to understand your baby and know your baby too. So like, I knew his hunger cues versus gas cues versus being sleepy cues, and could plan according to that. Again, it was also the summer here, so after those, you know, 15 days and stuff, I really wanted to get Hendrix used to being out and about and falling asleep in his car seat. So we would go on long walks, we would go downtown and spend time outside. I don't know if I would have been as comfortable in like the dead of winter being stuck inside with places. Just again, my fear was like viruses and stuff. But being outside, I was like, you know, we're out in the open. We would go to the boardwalk. Sometimes we would just walk around the neighborhood here. But I really wanted to get him used to being out, and so that I could do things too. And, you know, he was comfortable falling asleep with noise around or people around or lights and brightness. So this has gone on much longer than I thought it was going to be. I can see Hendrix on the baby monitor starting to stir, so I'm going to leave it at that. If you have any questions or comments or wish I talked about something a little bit more in depth, please reach out to me. I am so grateful for the people who were my rock during my time of postpartum, that I promised to make time to help friends out and be there as a support to others who are also going through it. Because if you have somebody that you can turn to and ask questions, ask for advice, and just talk and rant if you need to, it really does make a world of difference. You are not alone in this. Even though, yes, I know you're going to feel like it, you're going to feel so alone, so lonely, you are not. And other people have been there, and just know that everything is a phase and that things shift and change. And do your best to just be present with your baby. Be sad when you need to, but also try to just look for the positive in things. Ask for help from friends, from family, from your doctor, from any resources that are available to you. Take advantage. Do not think that you have to do this all alone, because you don't. And that was a lesson that I really, really, to this day, still need to embrace. But take help when it is offered to you. I love you all so much. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for being part of this journey. I couldn't have done it without you guys being there to support me, for cheering me. A lot of you have been incredible cheerleaders for me, and I'm so grateful. I will see you in the next episode. This episode is brought to you by my program and guide, Yoga Mama Journey. Journey to a happy and healthy pregnancy and baby. Navigating pregnancy can be so transformative in the best possible ways, but it can also feel overwhelming at times. I've put together a program and guide that will help you to alleviate some of that guesswork and be in great shape, mind and body, for when baby comes into your world.
This program contains prenatal workouts, prenatal yoga flows, prenatal Pilates, affirmations for pregnancy, pregnancy supplement checklist, baby registry checklist, hospital bag checklist, and additional resources. You can use the link in the show notes to access the Yoga Mama Journey, Journey to a Happy and Healthy Pregnancy and Baby program and guide. If you love this podcast episode, spread the love by sharing this with your friends and family, share it out on social media, and don't forget to give it a 5-star rating and review. From the bottom of my heart, I am so grateful that you are here. Until next time.